Access to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that helps people with cancer learn about and capitalise on the many benefits of integrative medicine. Each week on the show, I speak to key people from the world of integrative medicine who are working to improve the experience and outcomes of cancer. And today, I'm going to be discussing the symbolic nature of illness with a regular guest of mine, Victoria Fenton. I'm speaking with Victoria over the internet in Austin, Texas. Victoria, great to have another opportunity to chat.
It's so good to be back, Robin.
It's more than a year since we were last on the show, and it does seem that you've been moving around the planet very fast in between. I'm hoping that maybe at the end of our chat we can catch up a bit on your latest developments.
For sure.
So today we're going to be talking about a topic that we penciled in back in 2021 as something that we both thought would make a really interesting subject, the symbolic nature of illness. Mm-hmm. So when we say illness on this show, of course, we're particularly interested in cancer, which has certainly got its own fair share of symbolism. So just to start out by describing the territory, what are we talking about when we say the symbolic nature of illness?
It's such an interesting conversation because it's not typical in terms of the way we think, particularly in the Western world. But when I think of the symbolic nature of illness, I understand what I'm trying to convey by that statement is that the body is more than just the physical cells that you see before you and that you can touch, and that there is an energetic nature to the reality of the human experience. And therefore, there is much more to do with our human functioning than is necessarily the way we typically think. So when I'm looking at the symbolic nature of illness, I try my best to keep everything in mind, as in there are real physiological genesis factors for illness developing, but there's a lot of energetic ones too. There's a lot of additional elements of the way we live within our bodies and in our lives, which influences the way our physiology is able to function. And therefore, when we're looking at the broader concept of what it means to be a human being and the entire somatic reality of that, there are a lot of different ways that illness can manifest. And therefore, sometimes looking with a slightly more creative eye at symptoms and illness and disease is necessary. And that's when you can get into symbology and a bit more, what is this really trying to say? What is my body trying to say with this symptom or illness?
Mm. So I've heard you talking about learning to listen to your body rather than what's in your mind. And this is a good topic, I think, and definitely one for people with cancer. So do we want to just go into that a little bit right at the beginning about the mind versus intuition?
Sure. I mean, it depends on how strong you want to go with your statements, but the mind is literally just making stories up. Like if you think about,
totally agree.
Reality, the only thing that exists is this moment right now. And now this moment, and now this is the only moment, but our mind is capable of time travel. So our mind can go all the way into the past to try and rationalize and make sense or beat us up about our past experience, or it can go all the way into the future and project for good and for bad. So this mind system has no bearing in what's actually happening. It's basically scanning and trying to understand based on past experience what's happening in the future. So thoughts, they seem like they're us, but they're basically this computer inside our head that's taking a lot of different bits of data from our body, from the world around us, running it through our own computational framework, and then making up a sentence or a statement that you kind of have in your head. That's all great, but it's not the entirety of the truth. So when you're actually thinking, okay, so what is this system that we exist within? The mind is just one fragment. There's so much that's happening underneath the surface. And when you talk about intuition, what is that? That's not a mental thing. If we all think about intuition, it's like, it's physical. We say gut instinct. We say, oh, I just have this spidey sense. You say, oh, there's this, I just feel off. That's not your mind making sense. In fact, if anything, your mind has no concept of what's happening, hence these weird statements that we have about it. Yeah. And what we are now starting to understand is that the nerve complexes within the human body tend to relate to old ancient chakra systems. They were just picking up on energy that is now, it's a hotbed of nerves, the stomach, abdomen area being a really important one. And when we look at all of that, it's like, well, our body is giving us feedback all the time. And the environment around us is giving us signals that we don't fully understand all the time. And all the space in between you and the other has energy within it. So when you're thinking of like intuition, it's more of a sense of a whole ancient system and your consciousness reacting and responding to the world in front of you, which has way more information in it than just your mind, which is basically making up a fiction of whatever's happened in the past or might happen in the future.
Yeah, well, the mind seems to me very much a double-edged sword, because it's a damn useful thing as well, isn't it?
Right.
And actually, some of those computations can be really set in good stead occasionally. But, of course, an awful, awful lot, probably the majority of what goes on in there is complete crap, if you excuse the expression. There is this sort of feeling of like, well, if I dispense with that, it'll just be an empty space. I'll just be a bit gaga. And, of course, you're saying that actually that our unwillingness to dispense with it is in fact closes us off to the mass of other information which is coming by other means that we don't understand.
Right. And I always say make your mind an ally. So it's very much about our minds are great at understanding things, and we wouldn't be having this conversation if we didn't have intellect and the ability to have language and all these kind of things. But they're not great for making your own decisions or really tuning into how you're feeling, because feeling is not a mental thing. But can you use your mind to direct awareness? And that to me is the key. It's like the big thing that stands us apart is our capacity for layers of awareness, self-awareness and self-reflective consciousness. So the ability to direct our mind to become more aware of what's happening in the present moment, it changes that computational mechanism slightly. So the biggest problem with the mind is not that it's running computations all the time. It's that we don't pay any attention to them. And we tend to be running thought loops from the past, typically traumatically instigated. Like we learned something went terribly wrong, therefore we're not going to do it again, or all those things. Very subconscious. It's not conscious thinking. So an unexamined computational brain framework will just keep you running on autopilot of adaptation strategies away from pain, typically away from past trauma. So having the mind is great. You're never going to get rid of it. So using it to your advantage to become more aware, like what is actually happening right now in this moment, is the way to get around the whole time traveling mind loop.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we're going to talk a little bit about crisis, which is another way of describing cancer. So the benefit of a crisis, it opens up big questions about life. In nature, it's kind of easier to see crisis as a part of some bigger cycle, you know, the cleansing force of the forest fire or something. Overall, you can see that no harm's really done to nature as a whole. It's just something that comes and goes. So crisis is horrible, but there are things for us to learn and grow in it, aren't there?
100%. And just before I touch on that, I'm very adamant about not what we call spiritually bypassing. So when you hit crisis, it's not great to go, oh, there must be meaning in this, or everything happens for a reason. And in fact, that's literally the worst thing to say to someone who's hit crisis, because yes, but if you think about that energy, it's a very post-event reflection. It's not in the moment of the heat of the forest fire, it's afterwards.
Right.
So I'm a very big believer in almost living the paradox of being totally within the experience of feeling all the feels, as we'd say in America, where I'm sitting now. It's very like being in the experience of pain and distress is reality. That's being in contact with the harm, the hurt, the distress, the potentials. But also having that secondary awareness and dual awareness of this is clearly stopping me short in my tracks. There's something about this which is changing the course of my life. It's a pivot point. And we get to be within that pivot point in multifaceted ways. We can be in the distress and the trauma. We can be in the, hang on a second, what's this getting me to ask about my life and the direction I've been going? And it is an opportunity. Every crisis can be an opportunity. But that's not to say that the only way to go through a crisis is to just think, oh, well, it must be happening for a reason, because that's a bit, it's just detracting and distracting you from the real pain and of what's happening.
Sounds very sound. Yeah, okay. So the crisis which we've all shared, of course, recently is COVID. I think it's had a profound effect on vast numbers of people. kind of things have been around, have been enforced isolation, solitude, stress, fear, depression. All of those things have prompted people to kind of lift the cover a bit and think a bit more deeply about what's really important to them. And I think these have actually changed the way that many people live. We've certainly experienced this at Yes to Life in the way that well-being has quickly become an accepted norm. It's actually a thing now, rather than some sort of new age concept, which was, you know, before.
Yeah.
Have you noticed similar things happening?
Yeah, I've noticed a lot. The distress and stress and uncertainty that bred into the entirety of the globe really hit everyone in a profound way, especially when you combine that with enforced isolation. So there's a big enemy that we don't really know how it works. Plus, you need to be on your own and every other human might be a potential threat. And that narrative creates a different chemistry within all of our nervous systems. And suddenly we are swimming in a soup of stress. And so at that point, we reach to the things that maybe we'd never have needed to reach to because we never got to the point where we recognized we were outside what we in the coaching world would call the window of tolerance, which is basically, you know, I'm well regulated in my nervous system. I'm not too stressed and I'm not stepping into a stressed state. Well, suddenly you dump yourself in a pool of stress that you can't do anything about. You're instantly outside of that window of tolerance and suddenly you reach for the tools that people like you and I might have been reaching for anyway because of our own life experience, but it becomes normalized. People are like, oh, let's meditate and let's do some breathing. Like, what's this breathing thing that I've heard about? It's like, and it's great. I mean, and the flip side of that is that a lot of problems have come to the surface for people and that people are facing into their demons in a way that they might have got away with never doing in their lifetime. In my particular position, I always think that's a good thing, but it's not easy to go through and to step into that realm of facing unhappiness with your life, with your work, with your living situation, all the things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I wanted to just look at one thing which has come, there's a lot of it about. It happened with COVID, it happens with a lot of the international things that are happening at the moment, and it plays into a lot of the symbolism, I think, that we're going to be talking about, which is polarization. So generally, you think about that in the realm of public and international life, but also, of course, it's a force at work in our inner life. Just, you know, think of our ideas of like good and bad, selfish, selfless. And there's all sorts of spiritual dogma propping all this stuff up. So we can be divided against ourselves. So, many people kind of realize what a dangerous and damaging thing it can be. And the way it kind of seeks to gobble everybody up, polarization, you know, you actually completely struggle to find any scrap of ground in between two polarized positions. They won't let you stand there. They can't even be there. So, you know, fear's undoubtedly the biggest driver for all this stuff, although, you know, power can be a bit of a lure for some people in there as well. And so if you're frightened by symbolic ideas about disease, that makes us easy prey for polarized thinking. The sort of divide and rule thing really does work, unfortunately. And that in turn affects our ability to make important decisions. So polarization, we've got it. There's plenty of it around us. But do you want to say something about finding your way in amidst all that?
It's an interesting thing because when you speak to the topic of polarization, you are by necessity in a realm of extremes, and every sane person wants to bridge the realm of extremes, but you're speaking to people who are polarized and completely on the opposite end. But I still keep showing up, and I feel like I always try to have a both and approach. So if anyone's seen me professionally, they will know that I'm not anti anything, and I very much just try to understand the impact of all interventions, etc. I think when it comes to polarization, the one thing that I would say about navigating our way through is it's easier to hold an extreme than it is to exist in what is the reality of gray areas of life. And it just because it's easier doesn't mean it's actually healthier. You know, the rigidity with which you have to hold onto a polarized perspective, just think of that physiologically, the tension that you have to hold to stand up for your convictions and have all this fight. It becomes a physiological totality of stress, actually, just to hold your opinion. So if you look at that and understand that flow is essential for human functioning, moving towards a more gentle, softer position has to feel healthier, even if your ideology would prefer to stick to the polarized extreme. The polarization is interesting when it comes to especially the symbolism of cancer, etc., because there is a lot about cancer which is to do with separation. It's to do with divorce from a part of ourselves. And so nowhere is polarization more complex than when it comes to the kind of contemplation of symbolism of symptoms. And the way that I like to think of polarization when you're looking at this world, as you mentioned, it's like it's a bridge for some people to get to thinking of illness in a different way, is, you know, if your ideology is super strong, then listening to somebody else's opinion won't affect it. So listen and see what happens, because there's no, you don't need to not listen. If you're so convinced, you could listen to any other opinion and it wouldn't matter. I think what's interesting is what's happening is people aren't just polarized. They're polarized and yelling really loud at the top of their voice and not making any space for listening, which just says to me there's no stability underneath their argument.
Good point.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, well, so there we are. This polarization, I say, is inside us as well. You know, there's the piece, you know, which thinks we're terrible and all that stuff. Very self-judging we are often. And then on the other hand, we think we're absolutely marvellous some of the time. you know, we're bouncing around from these ridiculous extremes that go on. But one of the things that's pretty common is you've already described, which is they're wanting to get away from certain things and move towards others. And that's regardless of what's real, we actually prefer one to the other. It's not, you can see why, it makes sense. But nonetheless, it means that people generally have a whole lot of stuff to do with themselves, which is kind of held down, you know. We're keeping away from that stuff, aren't we? And then something comes along like a crisis, and it can be suddenly the whole lot thrown in your face, maybe, which is very hard to deal with. But this is a case where this polarization is suddenly, you see what's actually going on. You see it's not in your favor to be in this position. You're very weak, if you like. But, you know, the strength that can be found in this is all about accepting the fact of what's there rather than going through this process of always trying to push it away. So can we go in a little bit now into kind of encompassing and accepting the darker parts of life?
Oh, it's such an easy thing to say and such a difficult thing to do.
Yes.
And the reason for that is, look, we're all human beings listening to this. We all have nervous systems which advantageously push us towards survival. So it's default within our literal systems to navigate away from stress.
Yeah.
So then going, oh, hang on a second, you don't want to look at the darkness, is almost anathema to being a human being. Except when you recognize that all the things that we think are really dark about us and our shadows and the darker side of who we think we might be if we peeled back the layers and actually looked are all just hypotheses that our subconscious is holding based on our past experience. They're not any more true than the, oh, I'm fantastic and amazing side of things. They're the same fiction that our mind's making up, as we said earlier. But what happens within, particularly when there's been any kind of trauma, and trauma is a current obsession of mine, because I think it is the only thing that is truly influencing all of human beings. But we're thinking of all sorts of traumas, and trauma is anything that allows for that disconnection to happen. And that disconnection isn't a wrong thing, it's a biologically advantageous survival response to try and keep us safe. So within that nexus of looking at why is it so hard to look at the dark stuff, recognizing that it's self-protective allows us to just be aware of, okay, there's something underneath here that I'm repressing. The reason I'm repressing it is because I was trying to keep myself safe at some point because it was too hard to understand or know. Am I safe right now in this moment? And if you are, you can step towards looking at that underlying thing, because there's no need for the unsafety to carry on. But this is the big thing that I really feel into with this. It's not rip off the Band-Aid and look at all the darkness right now. It's just, you know, look at it and then turn away. Look at it and turn away. All of those distractions, disconnections, you chose for a reason. Your body chose as an adaptation strategy for a reason. And throwing yourself into the deep end of trauma is not necessary, nor is it particularly healthy. But allowing yourself to have so much compassion and look at those thoughts and really think, would you say those things to your child, to your best friend? Would you believe those things? Even if your child and best friend had done exactly what you'd done, would you say the same thing to them? Typically, the answer is always no. We just feel the shame bubbling up because we didn't really have any way of rationalizing it other than I'm bad. So.
I'm very glad you're making this point about the fact that it made complete sense to do whatever we did, withdrawal or self-protection at the time. But that's the thing we don't forgive ourselves for in a way, do we? We don't actually see that common sense piece about it. The fact it may be completely superfluous and unnecessary now gets missed at the same time. The thing gets playing on. So let's talk about cancer itself now, because it seems to me, I mean, we talked about a lot of things that maybe seem a little bit disjointed, but I think they're all kind of features of these very powerful narratives that are behind cancer. And to start with, the image that holds sway practically everywhere is of the evil mutated cells out to kill us. Our very own cells turned traitor, morphed into utterly untrustworthy killers, disguised and hidden like the enemy, deep within our bodies. So this is kind of a super powerful bit of symbolism, but really that's the story in the newspaper, the oncologist. Everybody has that story, don't they?
And it just isn't true.
Right.
Well, what I love about the human system is it's really intelligent even when it goes wrong. So we are all making cancer cells every minute of every single day. We make mistakes in replication of our own cellular reconstruction, essentially. But our immune system and a lot of mechanisms, which won't go into all the science of because it's excessively detailed, but we just kill those cancer cells. We go, oh, duh, that one's not quite right. We'll get rid of it. What happens within the development of cancers, and obviously cancer, we've said this so many times when we've spoken, cancer is a huge topic because it isn't one thing. But when you're talking particularly of tumor cancers and those growing cells, essentially what's happened is a cell has not been noticed by the immune system. And the thing about cancer cells is they can't use the same fuels as other cells, and they're disconnected from all of the other cells around them. And they just do exactly what a cell would do when it's frightened for its survival. It multiplies and replicates like mad because it's trying to hold on for dear life, for its little existence. And that leads to what we would call a cancer, something that needs to be excised out of us. What's happened in that storyline is that something has allowed your immune system not to recognize that the cancer cells were kind of present and growing. So that's an immune self-recognition thing that's happening, which we can park and talk about in terms of the symbology. But when it comes to this rampant cancer that's growing, it's just trying to survive like everything else that we try and do within our own cells. And it's just separated from our own body, which is why it's a little bit to do with separation and divorce, like I mentioned earlier. Mm. It's this thing that is not really connected to us, and yet we made it. And so within all of that, it's really complicated. And it, again, it's so much easier to think there's this evil demon cell body growing inside me. And it's literally sometimes when I, and you know, festering, there's a, this is kind of, oh my God, it's rampant, it's everywhere kind of sense of cancer. Yeah. And it just is trying its best to survive because it doesn't know it's a cancer cell. Like I'm trying to like anthropomorphize the psychology of cells, which obviously doesn't exist, but that's, it's not some evil. It's actually just being allowed to grow unchecked because of some breakdown in communication.
Mm. Anyway, some people actually do refuse to see cancer as the enemy. Sophie Savage was pretty strong on that one, you know, and so she, that kind of battle for language that gets used with cancer and things, she wouldn't use it and she didn't condone it at all. She kind of went for much more of a kind of a love-based stance rather than a fear-based one. Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting because, it could be more correct, her view, in some way. You know, it could be that we find even maybe one step further than what you're saying, that actually cancer, the story of it could be turned on its head to the degree that the process of cancer will be understood as the body struggling to keep us alive under very difficult circumstances. So it's doing its best. It does kill us in the end, but maybe it keeps us alive longer than we would have done otherwise. Who knows? But the story, though, is the powerful piece about it, because the most powerful story, if you like, about cancer is that it equals death. You know, that's what people, that one's pretty strong, isn't it? Cancer equals death. You know, the minute that you have the words, you have cancer, you know, that has the power to throw us instantly into an existential crisis. Whether or not it's really the case, it might be only very mildly threatening. But nonetheless, that is there. It's built into society everywhere, and it's been around a long time. An extraordinarily strong and powerful thing to navigate emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, in every way, isn't it? It's like a massive thing thrown at us.
It is. And I really struggle with this kind of sense that everyone else dictates our narratives around things like health, because you walk into a doctor's office feeling one way and in any illness, and you suddenly get given a label and you walk out of that doctor's office an entirely different person. And what's actually happened in that half an hour appointment is nothing to your physiology. Right. Literally nothing, and everything to your psyche. And I would love to create a parallel universe where we tried delivering these kind of informational things without the weight of the label of cancer and the diagnosis and the potential pitfalls of all the future opportunities or options, and just see what would happen differently in the human physiology if you knew you had cancer, but you didn't make that mean anything. Would the body actually rally and suddenly realize what it needed to do and actually take the opportunity, self-destruct the cancer cells and heal? We have no idea what impact that level of story around cancer does to the human physiology. Like, I mean, and if anyone listening to this has actually been in one of those appointments where you've walked in without knowing and then you've walked out, the difference in your body sensing is profound, and yet literally nothing's changed except someone has given you a label. And that, to me, it really makes me angry that there is so much power, particularly from doctors, to affect our psyche. And what I love about what you just said is like about the story that we choose, and maybe it's love and maybe it's the body trying to keep us alive. We all get to choose the myth that we have surrounding our illness, our disease, our symptoms, our anything. And it's just belief. And it really doesn't matter whether it's objectively true and scientifically verified or a belief. But I would always err on the side of choosing a belief which is connective and empowering, love and saving my life and all that kind of stuff, rather than disempowering and I feel out of control. And the reason for that different choice is because everything about the human body runs on the nervous system. And the moment you feel out of control, your nervous system will rally all of its emergency protocols, stress, you know, fight, flight, freeze responses, all those kind of things, And also the interesting one in cancer, which is fawn, which is the fourth kind of sympathetic response, which is social mimicry. And you get into this kind of like, do I need to claim my cancer identity on Instagram and tell everyone about it? Or do I need to not tell anyone and hide and pretend it? It's like, how do I live in society now I have this label? That's literally social mimicry, a stress response in action. And it, like, if we're in disempowerment, we only have stress responses. If we're in empowerment and not necessarily the love and light, what's this here to show me? But hang on a second, this is an opportunity for a reset button. We get to choose a story that's empowering, which allows us to use all of our human faculties, not just those stress responses.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, I've just sent the results of a study today on diabetes patients. You may have seen it yourself, but they basically tested two groups of diabetic patients, and they gave them exactly the same thing to eat, but they put bogus labels on one set of food. One lot didn't have much sugar. The other one said it had lots of sugar. They're the same things, actually, the ones who got the ones that said they had lots of sugar up with the figures for their blood. So, I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, that's a real demonstration of what you're saying.
It's so, if you just think of science, like every scientific experiment has the placebo effect controlled for.
Yes.
Why would we do that if we didn't know that the human mind is powerful? And I know we're kind of spreading that paradox of saying your human mind is nonsense at the start of this conversation and now saying how, but this is the thing. It's supremely powerful because it skews our receptivity. That's what it does. It's the master controller of our nervous system, which literally changes which direction we're going to receive the information in. And so we get to invalidate all of its time travel, but we also get to navigate with it, allowing our mind to be directed to the things which are going to be empowering. And those food label studies, you can find them in a lot of places for different reasons, etc.
Right.
And exercise as well. Like if you get people to actually do an exercise regime, or you get people to really powerfully visualize the exercise regime, the people who visualized it have as many muscle developments as the people who actually did the exercise. And you're like,
awesome.
We know nothing about the human body, really. So all we have is the stories that we get to tell ourselves. And I'm a big believer in creating your own myth and creating your own storyline through the way you tell your reality.
Okay. Well, look, can we just sort of get practical here a little bit? So it's fair enough that basically somebody will go through life and they'll be sort of unconsciously trusting their body, because their bodies, let's face it, they do amazing things to keep us well. Whatever we throw at them, they do their best, don't they? And
they try.
Amazing what you could do to bodies and they still keep going.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's reasonable to have placed our trust in them to a certain extent. Along come, you have that appointment, you go in there and you say, you got cancer. That trust is fundamentally jarred, at least, if not completely smashed by that. So what do you do with that in terms of what you're saying? That's, you know, all the myth, if you like, or the symbolic story of cancer has just crashed in on you in one go there. Mm. What are you going to do about that, really, in terms of reframing it?
So the interesting thing for me is that the reframe should come last. So absolutely, if you feel like in that moment you can't trust your body, feel that for a minute, because it's not necessary to jump straight to, oh, hang on, let's reframe this and just how do I trust again? Feeling, like I said before, feeling everything that you feel is really relevant. But understanding the reality that the body has literally divorced itself from the cancer. Your body is the body that has the cancer inside it, if you like. Your body is the bit that you can trust. Something's gone wrong slightly with the software and the systems. And the only way to truly find the ability to move through all the processes that you're going to have to go through once you have that cancer diagnosis is to be an ally for your own body and help it by being on its side. It hasn't let you down. You didn't do anything wrong. The human body clearly has default brake mechanisms that it will fall into if the stresses from the outside are significant enough. And we live in a very crazy, very toxic, very stressful, very heavy world where things can go wrong. And that means that when things do go wrong, it's not your fault. It's not you could have done something different and all would have been well. Maybe it's an opportunity to look at some things, but there is a survival instinct happening on all sides within your body. And that means that whatever the reality is on a doctor's test results or on the label that you've been given, your body is still fighting for your survival. And that means that it deserves your trust now as it ever did. And only from that place do you really have the potential to resolve what's happening. And I hate the word fighting cancer, and I hate the kind of battle energy that we have, because again, you're back in that drive of sympathetic overdrive of like fight, flight, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But being with and moving through can only be done when you are on your own side.
Mm. Good one. I like it. Okay. And again, you've jumped outside the sort of black and white polarized thinking of battling against this dark force and all that stuff. You're actually just supporting the good stuff. Very nice. Okay. I wanted to come back to something you've mentioned quite a few times. You keep talking about connection. And it's interesting that cancer as an experience, anyone who's had it will readily tell you, is very isolating. For some reason, you get locked in a private battle, you know, as we just described all too easily. On the other hand, we've got this thing which has shown us quite clearly, science has shown us, that overall well-being is affected more by our social circumstances than anything else. It's like the stats are just like, wow, look at that. It's sort of common sense, but there it is in science. So people find out about this connectedness in different ways, and one of the ways is through having cancer, interestingly enough, isn't it?
Right.
But there are other ways. You know, people have spiritual experiences and they find out about connectedness. They have take psychedelics and find out about the connectedness as well. But I think, you know, I think we probably agree that if they don't find out about their actual true connectedness, they're going to have been a dark place with their cancer.
Yeah, and it's not something you can force, is the thing. It's not like you can just throw yourself into a party atmosphere and feel connected, because you can feel more alone in a room full of people than you do in your own little home. I think the thing that breeds the isolation is shame. And that key piece, it's like, why did this happen to me? Did I do something wrong? Like we were just saying, that is what makes us want to isolate. There's a very complex and beautiful way our nervous system works and drops us into this kind of dorsal vagal tone, which you don't need to understand what it means, but it basically is retreat. It's like, no, I need to pull myself away. Whereas the opposite side of that is the ventral vagal complex, which is socialization. It's externalization. It's not necessarily talking to everyone about your cancer, but just being surrounded by tribe. And that's why I think that community is found in illness, and absolutely use it, because the reality of shared experience is literally inbuilt into our DNA. It helps us metabolize. And there's a fascinating thing about cancer physiology, that metabolism in the cancer cells in particular is totally changed. And the metabolism in your body will change as you go through treatments. It's like metabolically processing stuff becomes more challenging. So if you can socialize and talk about it, and talk about it doesn't actually mean talk about it to people. If it's not the friends that you've always known, fine. If it's not your family because you don't want to hurt them, fine. If you just want to start a blog Like, that's actually talking about it and externalizing it, and people will find it, and there will be that ability to integrate it slightly. And when I think of the solution to disconnection, it's integration. And within integration, it isn't necessarily airing your dirty laundry. It's just recognizing that nothing about cancer devalues your worth or makes you any less human than the next person. And that means that you deserve to feel integrated into any element of society that you wish, irrespective of the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the kind of common theme that ties together a lot of the answers you've given to things is being kind to yourself, if you like. It's stepping back and looking at things you've done or things that have happened to you and not seeing them as mistakes or bad moves or, you know, anything to interpret anything about yourself from necessarily.
Yeah, there's no meaning to any of this. There's just the way you reacted in a moment, and curiosity, understanding the legacy patterns of why that might have been, is the solution for all of this. It's like the only solution for the shame and the judgment, etc., is recognizing that we're all human and developing that beginner's mindset of, well, hang on a second, what, why? Like becoming an annoying three-year-old and just asking why a thousand times. Not why did I get cancer, but why do I feel like that? Why did I do that in that scenario? And it's not because you're on a witch hunt against yourself. It's because there's always a reason. And typically it's a biologically adaptive response that was accurate for that moment. So is cancer. That's the irony.
Right.
Cancer is a biologically adaptive response that was appropriate as a choice from your body in that moment. Nothing more.
Right. Very good description. I like it. Okay, advert break now. The timing the timing for this chat, I've got to say, is very good for two reasons. Firstly, many, many more such public explorations are going on than there ever were before the pandemic. You must have noticed that. It's really great. So I think there's a sort of growing zeitgeist around this arena. Secondly, for the first time ever, we have devoted an entire annual conference to the subject of finding a deeper connection. So I'm really looking forward to this. I love this stuff. It's on the 24th of September, and it's our first in-person event for far too long. So we've got some really inspirational speakers. It probably would include you if you didn't live on the wrong side of the planet. So it's not one to miss if you found any aspect of today's chat has caught your interest. So look on our website if you want to find out more or book. So having done the advert, let's come back. I did say at the outset, look, you've been doing a lot of things and moved around the planet quite fast since I last talked to you. What have you been doing? What are you doing now? And yeah, just tell us all about it.
Well, I think today's conversation is a really good example of it. I have been drawn more and more into the world of actually reflecting what allows our human system to break down. And when I say that trauma has become a bit of an obsession, I kind of landed there all the time. I've always been obsessed with the nervous system, as you know, and like understanding the trauma legacies into that has really shifted my perspective. And, you know, COVID helped with the whole kind of, hang on a second, there's a bigger storyline here. So I migrated my UK-based practice into being much more of a functional medicine meets coaching meets spirituality and self-awareness practices, something called human design. And then I decided that my world needed to be more over in America because it's where all of this happens. And so I'm currently sitting in Austin, Texas, where I have established an integrative holistic practice where I do packages with coaching clients, where we find the foundation of that inner work, the landscape that we've been talking about today, but I also have the ability to tie in the physiological, the health tech, and the evolutionary kind of health biohacking kind of stuff, spirituality and self-awareness, and working one-to-one with clients. But I also, over 20 years, have kind of developed this strange system of the way I support people to healing, and recognize that there is a real need for trauma-aware, incredibly holistic practitioners. So I have established an academy to train practitioners, which is launching in September. We have our first founding member cohort starting in September this year, which is a year-long course to train practitioners to do what I do.
Right. What's the course is entitled?
It's so my academy is called the Unveil Academy. So it's Unveil is our company, and it's just a coach training certification. So essentially it's 11 months with me, education every week, 9 pillars of education, 40 odd modules of teaching. I'm kind of like putting it all in there, Robin. It's just like there's no ground left uncovered, but all the way through from, you know, inner work, gestalt techniques, mindset stuff, spirituality, human design, human physiology, so many things are going in there, because I really feel like having a new breed of healing professionals who can not just take someone with cancer and go, oh, we'll do the, you know, adjunct therapies and maybe try some mushrooms or whatever it is, not psychedelic ones, proper cancer-based mushroom science, but also to take them on that emotional journey, because it's a whole thing, as we've spoken about today, and to have practitioners who are capable of meeting clients' needs from start to finish is exactly what is needed to resolve the traumas that happened, because trauma is just needs not being met. So if we can build a breed of practitioners who can meet people's needs wholly and holistically, we're solving a lot of problems.
Well, I've talked to you enough to know that course is going to be rammed with information.
Yes. My own coach is going, take it out, Victoria. You can give too much. I'm like, no, they need to know everything.
Everything, absolutely. Well, fantastic. What's the website for that?
Unveilacademy.com.
Okay, fantastic. Well, look, there we are. That was a lot today, but that's all we got time for. As always, very exciting and inspiring. Love talking to you, Victoria. Thank you for coming on.
Such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Victoria is a powerhouse of ideas for change, drawing on her considerable storehouse of personal experience both as a patient and practitioner. So I've no doubt her course will provide a goldmine of resources to practitioners. As mentioned during our chat, our annual conference is in person again at last. It's in Euston, that's not Houston, but Euston, London, on the 24th of September. And its title is Finding a Deeper Connection. There's a great early bird price if you book right now, so do take a look. Go to the Yes to Life website at yestolife.org.uk and click the button on the banner for the conference that comes around right at the top of the homepage. Thanks very much for listening today. I'd love you to join me again next week when I'll be introducing you to another expert from the world of integrative medicine for the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.